नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम चैप्टर कैंटो 8 चैप्टर 19 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड द लॉर्ड बेग्स चैरिटी फ्रॉम बली महाराज टेक्स्ट 35, 36, and 37. निष्ठाम परपेचुअल रेसिडेंस ते ऑफ यू ट्रांसलेशन यू विल सर्टेनली बी अनेबल टू फुलफिल योर प्रॉमिस एंड आई थिंक दैट बिकॉज ऑफ दिस इनएबिलिटी योर इटर्नल रेसिडेंस विल बी इन हेल इज नो पर्पट सो वी गो टू टेक्स्ट 36 न तद्दानं प्रशमन्ति येन वृत्तिर्विपद्यते दानं यज्ञस्तपः कर्म लोके वृत्तिमतो यतः ट्रांसलेशन लर्नेड स्कॉलर्स डू नॉट प्रेज दैट चैरिटी विच एंडेंजर्स वन्स ओन लाइवलीहुड चैरिटी सैक्रिफाइस ऑस्टेरिटी एंड फ्रूटिव एक्टिविटीज आर पॉसिबल फॉर वन हु इज कॉम्पिटेंट टू अर्न हिज लाइवलीहुड प्रॉपरली They are not possible for one who cannot maintain himself. Again, no purport, so we go to text 37. Dharmaya yashaseerthaya, kamaya svajanaya cha, panchadha vibhajan vittam, iha mutra cha modate. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Therefore, one who is in full knowledge should divide his accumulated wealth in 5 parts, for religion, for reputation, for opulence, for sense gratification, and for the maintenance of his family members. Such a person is happy in this world and in the next. Purport. The Shastras enjoin that if one has money, one should divide all that he has accumulated into 5 divisions. One part for religion, one part for reputation, one part for opulence, one part for sense gratification, and one part to maintain the members of his family. At the present, however, because people are bereft of all knowledge, they spend all their money for the satisfaction of their family. Srila Rupa Goswami taught us by his own example, by using 50% of his accumulated wealth for Krishna, 25% for his own self, and 25% for the members of his family. One's main purpose should be to advance in Krishna consciousness. This will include dharma, artha and kama. However, because one's family members expect some profit, one should also satisfy them by giving them a portion of one's accumulated wealth. This is a shastric injunction. So in the continuing wonderful story of King Bali Maharaj, which is actually very pertinent to all of us, because we know the story. It has been going on for some time of how Maharaj Bali got the powers because of his dedication and sincere worship of his service to his Guru Maharaj, that is Shukracharya. And to a large part because of that powers, he could defeat the demigods and take over all the heavenly planets. And now, so you can imagine how grateful he is. And now he is being confronted by a very incredible situation where a young dwarf who just walks in unannounced and has asked for 3 steps. He's asked for some boon, which Maharaj Bali, who's controlling the entire, all the planets, really, could easily give, and he thinks he can, you know, what he could give is in huge quantities, and then against which this little dwarf just asks for 3 steps. So initially Maharaj Bali's reaction is a little incredulous, you know, he's a little condescending, said that, you know, you should know how to ask, when you come to a big personality and asking only for 3 steps, it doesn't make sense. But then it was Vamandev, who's Lord Krishna, who's come there for a purpose to glorify actually Maharaj Bali's greatness. He actually then explains to him that if you're not satisfied internally, then whatever you have externally has no meaning. So whether you ask for 3 steps or whatever, you will still be dissatisfied. So eventually Bali Maharaj says, okay, you want 3 steps, I can give you 3 steps. Now this is the stage where his guru, to whom he owes so much, he has actually helped him to give everything that he wanted, and he has captured, because of the powers that he got through the service of his guru, everything that he wanted. I mean, he got all the demigods were afraid of him, and at this stage his guru has a different opinion. He interrupts and with the sharp intellect and powers that Shukracharya has, Shukracharya immediately understood that this is Vishnu, and he has some trick in his up his sleeve, that he is asking for 3 steps, but he is going to take away everything, which is actually the case. So the amazing thing is that Shukracharya had the powers to be able to understand what who this personality is and what he's going to ask. Even he knew that. He could predict it very clearly. So now, Bali Maharaj, one would think that he has so much gratitude to his guru, and at the same time now he has given his word. So this is where Vamandev wanted to bring out the greatness of Bali. And because it comes in subsequent chapters, so I will not go into detail, but eventually he overrides his Guru Maharaj. And and the Shastras also enjoin this, that when you are being misled, you have to use your sense of discrimination and do the right thing. So here we would like to concentrate on Shukracharya's mood and what he represents. So I'd like to touch upon this because I think it's very, very pertinent to all of us, because what Shukracharya really, of course, it is at a much, much, much higher level than what we could even imagine, whatever we may perceive, but nevertheless it is in the same approach, that what seems to be what is seemingly very attractive and logical and understanding, but in reality, if you go a little deeper, it is actually contrary to spiritual principles. So actually when we think of spirituality or God, and then we think of demons, I'm saying for myself, and I think that is probably most people, you know, when we have grown up, we have seen in, you know, comics or in books, in movies, you know, the differences is shown, it's very black and white. There is absolutely the, you know, God, you know, with all the shining light and everything. I remember some of the older, you know, movies, Sant Tukaram and all that, you know, Sant Gyaneshwar, and, you know, you can clearly make out who is the good man. And on the other hand, so the devotees and the Lord are clear, there's no disputing that. And then when you see the black, you know, the demon is so ugly, he has probably horns sometimes, or he may be certainly black, and probably 5 teeth are missing, and very ferocious looking. So it is. So there is a very subtle danger in that, because we keep thinking that since these personalities are not around us, we don't see such kind of personalities, therefore these kind of demons are not there. And okay, we may have a little demoniac mentality, and maybe we have got everyone is good and bad, and everyone has that. So when we see something wrong, then we say, okay, maybe we should try to do good. But what it misleads us is to think that that everything around us is more or less okay, but sometimes I may make mistakes and okay, I will do good to others. And you know, but we miss the main point that what is the purpose of our life and where we are going and what is who is God. And in that connection, here Shukracharya represents that where if you go to see his logic and even the verses today, when he talks about charity, he talks about livelihood, that and you can't generally dispute it. You will say yes, it makes sense. But that way, if you reflect on what Ravan or say Hiranyakashipu, some of the other super demons of the Bhagavatam, they were pandits. They were brilliant. They were very learned. They could quote the shastras. They could twist the shastras. If you see the arguments, they could actually make it sound really as if they could understand also. But it was ultimately whatever served their own interests, their own purpose. So when I was reading this few days ago, I just was reflecting about when we're talking of gurus and Shukracharya is a guru. And then I was thinking of Srila Prabhupada, and I was seeing that there is a certain similarity of at one level, but overall there is such a complete contrast of 180 degree difference. The one common fact, of course, is that there is very sharp intelligence. It is Krishna has given that. Shukracharya also has got very very sharp intelligence. Prabhupada was also very intelligent, brilliant. But this, everything else is 180 degrees different. Why? Because Shukracharya is using his intelligence to preach to the rich. Vali Maharaj, of course, is rich. That's an understatement. And then he's telling him how he can get richer, more powerful. Prabhupada went to preach to the rich and told them that you should embrace poverty and that you are already poor, that you are poor of spirit, you don't have anything. You're so blunt. So, we can see how grateful we can be, we should be to Prabhupada, that actually when he brings this stark reality in front of us, who would want this kind of Vaishnava philosophy? Everybody would like to improve their standard of living, and that is what even the Vedas tell us. The Vedas actually tell us that how we should. We gradually, they take us from atheism to, our consciousness goes from atheism to material standards by the worship of the Lord. So we are tempted to, so therefore Krishna says don't get enamored by the flowery language of the Vedas, because that actually changes our consciousness actually from atheism to material objects, and thinking that by pleasing the demigods, pleasing the Lord, we will get something. And here, Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, Prabhupada tells us straight that it is the Lord's mercy. By His Lord's mercy, He will give you what you want. But it is special mercy when He takes everything away. So, at least when I heard this, it was really quite frightening also. And it can be intimidating that, but then when we come to realize that there is whatever Krishna wants to do will happen. We can't control things. But the way we see it, that it can be extremely reassuring to us actually. Because Krishna says, you come to my abode, that is the ultimate, and then there is no problems basically. But he also tells in Bhagavad Gita that, as his name Lord Hari indicates, that one who takes everything away. So he will take away all that is coming in the obstacle of a devotee. So it may be material progress, it may be whatever, he may be causing impediments, but that, so who would like this kind of philosophy? To hear we have heard from our parampara, the Vaishnava parampara, it very bluntly tells us that the purpose is very clear, and at the same time it is a special mercy. So therefore it also explains why people who really want gold will will go through the austerity of actually finding it and accepting it. But people who want gold very quickly and think that anything that glitters is gold, then they will go for the wrong objects and they will get fooled. Then we can't blame the person who's selling the gold. It's a question of we have accepted the wrong thing because we wanted to settle for something different. We wanted to fool ourselves. We didn't want to go through those austerities. So here it is the same, that the austerity of facing up to the reality and knowing that this material world is not for our pleasure. There is pleasure. The soul is seeking pleasure all the time, but it is not here. It is because here we try to do the best we can here and we try to link up with Krishna because that is the purpose of the human life. But eventually when we are, Krishna takes us back, then we will find the genuine peace and everlasting happiness. So, and in Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada also talks about in the purport of that 7.15 verse where he says four types of people do not come to Krishna. So he constantly talks about miscreants, duskritina. So in that verse, Prabhupada explains that kriti actually means those who have done meritorious work, who have intelligence, who are capable. And actually, we see that even to manage material energy, to manage even without Krishna consciousness, there is intelligence. The question is, as we're seeing in this example or the story today, is the misdirect intelligence, that it takes us away from Krishna. So Prabhupada says that duskritina, those who are miscreants, that means those who have misdirected intelligence. And just last week, a perfect example I think was last week, you may have read perhaps in the papers about this 83-year-old yogi staying in a village near Ambaji, in Gujarat. And apparently he claimed that for 7 decades he has not had any water or any food. So, many papers carried it, thinking that there's another godman. You know how media represents, when they go to town, when they want to say anything, they're saying saffron clad, or, he's a godman is taken in a very derogatory way. Okay? He's a con man. Con man, godman for them is the same. So they went to town talking about this person. And then, I read it in so many papers, they covered it extensively. And this yogi was put for 15 days under observation in Ahmedabad hospital. And 30 medics from the DRDO, which is a science-based defense organization of the central government, were monitoring him round the clock. And for 15 days, this yogi did not go to the bathroom, did not even drink, did not eat. It's a fact. Now, that we may not be so surprised as aspiring bhaktas. We understand that these shaktis exist. And Prabhupada warned us that I think taking that is not the path because we'll be again looking for our own sense gratification. But nevertheless, following the yogic paths, this is possible. But what struck me as amazing were 2 facts. One was that immediately after this came, and we know again how the people would really, earlier they were, since they could not disprove this, there was no mention at all of any newspapers. Now such big news, they didn't see any element of controversy because this was proved beyond fact that 15 days he was monitored, like everybody was watching him. And then his organs and his all the blood tests and everything was done. Everything was fine. They just they were mystified. So that neurosurgeon was saying that he must be getting energy from somewhere, perhaps from the sun or from somewhere he's getting it. But they missed the point. So that was the first startling thing that which I found amusing that you'd never found anything after that because they were in a sense disappointed because the envious nature of the material world is such that, if there's any controversy, especially anything that could put some aspect of spirituality, even though we may not be following this path fully, but nevertheless, someone who actually has this, they would really try to destroy. But when they actually don't have, they have to withdraw. And then immediately there's no mention. I came to know because somebody mentioned it was in the back page of in a small thing in one of the newspapers. But it was very small carriage and none of the major newspapers carried it. At least not the way they would. And the second part was that the statements by the DRDO, Defense Research Organization of the central government. So they were excited. So I thought, very good. You know, if they're excited, means they have now understood. But the excitement was, they said that, well, you know, now the whole idea was that we can study how, because of this, you know, when soldiers go to the desert, how they can survive without water. Or astronauts, when they go to the, how they can survive. So they wanted to understand that. So again, there was no mention or even some recognition that this person may be getting, where is he getting his shakti, what is he doing. There's something in yoga, nothing. So this is just as recent as 10 days and it's just a reflection, and this is actually typical of what we see. The way we are made to see things, the way the environment tries to believe us. So there is a huge effort to discredit anything that is spiritual. And of course, much of it needs to be, anyway, it is a sham. But that's not the point. The point is the mood, the mentality is anything that could take us, because it is actually, I used to wonder why would we call it envy initially, because I thought, okay, this is someone doesn't follow the path. But when we see that actually it is a threat, because if genuine spirituality takes place, then actually it goes counter to the very nature of what we have been taught, that you know, consumerism, just sense gratification, use your intelligence to do what you can for yourself, etc. So there is no meeting ground. So this becomes a worry. Another story that comes to mind, one of the most famous yoga gurus of the country in the last several years, you know, he's become extraordinarily famous. Has his ashram in Haridwar and he goes. So there are millions of followers. So one communist leader, she's one of the main leaders, in fact, of CPM, and she's also an MP. So when she made the criticism that it is all these medicines that he's selling, the Ayurvedic medicines, they actually contain bones of animals. Of course, they all eat meat, but they knew that these people pretend. So they wanted to show that these so-called godmen are bogus. And there was a huge story about it. It was carried on for lots of weeks, and the criticisms were carried in many papers. And then detailed investigation was done, and then this was proved to be false allegations. But that part you will hardly see. It was mentioned, you know, you'll find it tucked away in the page number 5, just somewhere. It will not be given the same prominence. So it is a warning to us as to not to, we have to rely on the Shastras for what we hear, what we see. Our opinion should be framed by those whom we trust, who will not mislead us, who have a balanced view, and who have nothing to gain from they don't have any selfish motives, rather than from anyone, because today everything and everyone has something to gain from us. So today the tendency is the relationships that are developed are also because, if not now, there may be some gains, there may be material gains, there may be other gains for prestige, for power, whatever. So therefore, we should not try to cheat others, but we should also understand that as far as we are concerned, we also have to be very careful. And in the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, our Rupa Goswami also warns that those who indulge in this show of religion, show of spirituality, they are actually a disturbance. He says, Utpat means disturbance. They are actually a major disturbance society, and that we can see that this so-called show, rather than, so you have somebody who's completely against against any aspect of spirituality is one thing, we know where we stand. But when someone actually gives a show and gives us just a semblance of spirituality, and we feel that, okay, we are following the same diet, or we are following, we go to temples. People use the word temples for several things. People talk of, but their main purpose, ultimately, when we say, does it mean surrender to the Lord? Who is the Lord and what is our position? That there is a serious dispute. So that's one of the worries that we have. Even in the the Krishna book, in Krishna's time, the many Bhaktivinod Thakur, he gives the understanding of what the various demons represented, and in that all the various anarthas that the demons represented. And Putna's story is given to us. We know Putna's story, the witch who came, among the first demons who came to try to kill Krishna. And she represents the anartha of pseudo-guru, or pseudo-authority. Why? Because she gives the impression she came pretending to be a mother, pretending to nourish the child. And that is something very welcome. So if we talk of someone who comes to nourish us, to give us health and strength, that's to be appreciated. But the motive was very much disguised. So in the same way, we see that the externality, whatever values we hear of or culture we see, it may represent something which we think we also want. But we have to actually go beyond it and then see the reality. For instance, because values is a word which is, we hear so often today, values and culture. You know, even in the corporate world and everywhere, the people talk of ethics and honesty and hard work and all that. But if you go a little bit deeper and then you see what they actually mean, then the reality is different. For instance, people talk of self-respect, self-esteem. There is a subtle message that we have to concentrate on ourselves rather than on others. It actually goes, it weakens the desire to trust, it weakens the desire to put faith, because, and it brings us closer to, means it keeps making us feel that we are worthy of something. And our Shastras, the Vaishnava philosophy is that we are nothing. So it goes contrary to it. So when we are, most psychologists and others would constantly tell that you have to. Your main problem is that you don't know your worth. You don't know. You don't have self-esteem. You should have self-respect. But then that just inflates our ego. Devotees also have the self-confidence. Devotees also have, but they have faith in Krishna. And they have every effort that they will make every effort with full confidence that Krishna will do whatever is necessary. So they're not attached to the results. But here, when we are, when our ego is fed, it means that we are the doer. Similarly, when we are told that we should be passionate about achieving results. Now, what we would understand is, yes, it's a good thing. We need to put in the maximum effort, without doubt. But this passionate gradually goes to saying that you must develop the killer instinct. It also says that winner takes all. There's no room for losers. It brings in a caste system of success and failure. People talk so heavily criticize about that the bane of society today, of the world, of India, is like all the Western countries will keep talking about that the main problem is two things, overpopulation and caste system. Caste system, they say, well, you know, which, of course, the way it is put today, it definitely is a complete perversity. But they also follow a caste system of success and failure. If you are a failure, you are nobody. So success means what you can, rather than taking giving credit to where it is due, it is what you can do and what you have achieved. Never mind the circumstances which may have been favorable. Never mind that who gives you the intellect and all that, but you just grab it and that becomes a model. An example is that It doesn't mean, I mean, it means that character is not at all necessary. One example is that this personality is considered to be perhaps the best footballer of ever. Many people consider him to be the best soccer player of all time. He's a South American, and he became very famous in dubious circumstances, because about 25 years ago in a World Cup is when all the top teams come together to play, top countries come together. So it is really the kind of highest competitive institution for achieving glory in football. And in one critical game, he just in front of the goal, because the goal in soccer is to put the ball in the net. So you're supposed to play with your legs, not with your hand. If that's a foul, and then so he actually kind of pushed the ball with his hand into the goal, and somehow millions of people saw it on TV, but the referee didn't see it. So anyway, the goal was declared and he won. So then every time they refer to it, they call it the hand of God, because God did it. So then this man, initially he was saying no, but then afterwards it was very clear that obviously, you know, it was intentional. So what is amazing is that he's a person who people kind of hero worship. They will, you know how sycophancy goes and how people will make from zeros to heroes. I mean, they are the gods. So this person, now he says that I don't think it is cheating. I think it is craftiness. So I was thinking, this Shukracharya speaking, you know, how you use the word, you know, that it is craftiness. It's not cheating. So and people still worship, because they say ultimately he got the victory for his country. So and never mind that twice he was banned officially for three years from international organization because he was using drugs. Even that doesn't count. So today somebody is given the highest medal, Padma Vibhushan or Bharat Ratna, because they have achieved something. Sometimes it without achieving, because they have just bought out the system. But sometimes they may have. Somebody is blessed with a very wonderful voice, or somebody is lifted weights beyond what others can lift. But it is something which one can say, well, Krishna has blessed this personality with a good voice or a good physique or whatever. But that is completely missing. It is only that this person has done that and he gets. So that is, it doesn't matter whether he may have five wives or maybe he's divorced three times. That all these things don't matter. So there is absolutely absence of bankruptcy of character. It is only of what you achieve. So the success is the mantra of today. That you have to, if you are a winner, you are everything. Also, another value is stand up on your own feet, on your own two feet. Now, that is something which we also feel, yes, we should stand on our own two feet. Why should we depend on others? But gradually it is stretched to mean that you don't need to depend on anyone, and that anyone slowly extends to, anyone means everyone, that is including the Creator. So it makes a selfish outlook that you have to take care of your own self. You don't need to take any parental guidance. As we all know, in the Western countries, staying with your parents after you're 17 or 18 is considered a major embarrassment for girls and for boys. Hardly ever you hear, you know, after 17, 18, they strike out on their own. Both they wanted, the parents also wanted. Sometimes if they may not want it, the parents will want it. It is hardly ever heard that family, because it would be seen that he's kind of dependent and he doesn't know how to make his own two means. So that kind of pressure actually is put so that it makes a person feel that above everything else he has to manage on his own, which means the life is only meant about how I can manage my future. I don't really need anyone else. So what I gain, it is me. And if I failed, then I have to find ways to rectify it. But it is I, not that we don't see the context of the larger world who has brought us into this world, where the role of parents maybe, or the role of other. Spirituality is non-existent. It is purely on economic grounds. So independence or individuality is the most important thing. And that is why Prabhupada would refer to the modern day education as slaughterhouse education. That why? Because it just prepares us like in a slaughterhouse, the animals don't know. They're grazing and then they're in, just in a line, and they think they're very happy having the fresh grass, and then before they know it, then they have their life is finished. It's because they have been killed. So similarly here we're talking of the spiritual desires which get completely vanquished and killed, because the pleasures of the soul or the nature of the soul gets extinguished when we are gradually, when we are told that an undergraduate is a poor degree, graduate is better, postgraduate is much better. So the pressure is single-mindedly on that. So while as a devotee we see that if we have the capability or the environment and circumstances to do more, certainly we should do more, because we can then do so much more for in the right cause. But that is subservient to the consciousness that we should have, and not just in externality but in reality. That means we have to demonstrate in our lives that above everything else, it is critical the lifestyle we choose, and also the values that we choose. And that value would be that first and foremost we are the servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. And in that, we are struggling to understand our real identity and live that way. And within that, whatever the circumstances, somebody may have the facility to progress in academic education, so be it. Somebody may not, it doesn't matter at all. It is on the same level, it makes no differentiation at all. Absolutely none. But this this is very rare to hear, and one would feel ashamed to say that, well, I have not done more. Or rather, one would be so happy to keep on saying that my son went to the US, my son went to Australia, or my daughter went did this. That you put it as a, you will see it in subtle ways. You know, if you go to a family and you meet them, if they have achieved a postgraduate or a PhD or a master's, or he's in got a good job and high paying, proactively they will mention it. But otherwise, the absence of it, you must understand that jyada kuch kiya nahi hoga, but you know, they don't want to mention it. They will not probably, means it, they don't see it as a big thing. So if somebody is, if the son is just done a BCom or whatever, and or he may be not so good in studies, of course they cannot say, oh look, my son has done BCom. They will not say that, because they think it's of no value, because he's just low. So the subtlety in the mind is that we get caught up in feeling that this becomes the major pursuit. So these things, the self-esteem, you know, the developing a killer instinct, standing on our own 2 feet, all these lead us to look at the context of I and me. And even the lofty goals, you know, the way it is presented, as we said today, the whole, I mean, we've been discussing primarily this, that what is presented and how it is presented is really dangerous. Even a simple thing like, we talk of a defense minister, defense ministry. Actually, till some decades ago, it used to be called the war ministry during the World War II, which it, in fact, what it is. It is meant, but now they've settled, because the war sounds a little bit too aggressive. So the intention is aggressive, but they want to downplay it. So it's as if it's for national security, it's for defense. And in the name of national security, we see countries will rob other countries, completely, shamelessly rape and exploit other countries. They've been doing for decades, completely subjugate them. They become like they're stooges. Just like a bully comes to the neighborhood and captures that neighborhood, you know, he's a local dada, and says, I want to see who can fight me. All the other pygmies, you know, will get frightened in front of this huge guy. But in the same way, when a country comes and, you know, over the last several decades, but then that is taken as national security. It is, so how we do it, what we do it, you can torture people, you can take, because our country needs oil, our country needs this, so we have to go and take over another country. Doesn't matter if thousands may be killed in that. So therefore, this becomes a very dangerous thing. Similarly, even the economic progress of growth, we constantly hear one word, growth, growth, growth. Development, it means that there are developed countries, which means those who are backward. Backward means those who those who are not growing high. Now what is this growth? Growth is just that the sum total of all the, what they call the gross national product. You know, that is the way they define the total value of a country. that must, if it is X, it should be X plus 3%, X plus 5%, and somebody with X plus 10%, then that country is growing much faster. But eventually, there's no mention of how it is done. It is a fact that it can only be achieved the way it is going. It can only be achieved by exploiting nature, by health hazards, by environmental hazards, by so much of pollution, so much of corruption, and also not to speak of the degradation of the soul. I'm talking of just the material energy. The nature itself gets completely exploited. And they talk of poverty elevation, means reducing poverty. That's why the growth will reduce poverty. That's why we do it in. But actually, what it really means is that it is riches for some people. That it has been proven over the last 100 years that this system of so-called growth, it only enriches a few people, few countries and few people. Each country will have a very, very small percentage, usually maybe 1 or 2% of people who actually have, even if you try to fantasize and imagine, you cannot imagine how much wealth they can have. You cannot imagine. I was told that in Greece, just now there is, the country called Greece in Europe, suddenly there is a huge crisis. And it's a small country, few million people, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 million people. But in the country, in their capital of Athens, there is one vast area which is very rich, apparently. And only 45 or 50 people were paying income tax. But they have 17,000 swimming pools in that area. Now, sir, what does a swimming pool signify? In a private home, to have a swimming pool means it's one of the ultimate luxuries. Means you have to be super rich to have it. Super, super rich, because maintenance is exorbitant. So it says many things. It says that how they don't, so there are a smaller group of people. This is in every country, that people do not pay taxes and will manage it. Even if they pay taxes, but they have exploited and earned in such a way that if you earn 5,000 crores and you pay 1,500 crores, and people will say, oh, he's a good taxpayer. Like tobacco companies, and they earn fabulous profit, 50%, 60% margins. They'll pay tax, but ultimately it is destroying so many things, and they can keep the rest. So whether you pay tax or not is not the issue, but the thing, the mentality is that what is good for me, and that is, and this system suits me. Me means it may be me myself individually. It may mean my people who have been fortunate to be in a certain environment. And therefore, you have your own association. Like we have an association, they also have the associations. Or those who are at the head of their companies or institutions or government, politics, journalism, etc. So it becomes a small, what they call the intelligentsia. Intelligentsia means, the word gives us impression that they are the real intelligent. But actually, what it indicates is that they are the ones who are privileged to exploit the rest. And then everyone, you scratch my back, I scratch yours, which means everyone is, suits everybody. So the point that I would like to make is that we have to be extremely careful to understand how Bali Maharaj could understand what is genuine and what is bogus. Similarly, we talk of secularism. This has been discussed so many times here. Actually, secularism really means that we have respect for all religions, and that no matter, we may not understand some aspects of someone's religion or some lifestyle, but we just respect his desire to follow his understanding of God, that he understands, and then if he's sincere, Krishna will give him the understanding. Not to feel that I am the superior and that my path is the only way, all other things are... No, not that way. But actually, in reality, what they call secular, it means that it is another word for atheism. That means there's no room for any God, because that really, it's like the sand in your sweet rice. It spoils everything. So just keep him out, so that we can do what we want. We don't need to have any morality. We don't need to have anybody telling us how to live our life. We just want to do it, because that is the way. And I'm not harming anyone. I've not done anything. And by that, what we mean is that I've not gone and bashed up someone. I've not killed anyone. I'm a good man. So doesn't matter if... Because the higher the powers, the more distant you are from the actual action. It's like the president carries the you know, for instance, the president of a country of, say, USA, he will carry the bag in which he has the, ultimately, he, you know, if they, supposing a nuclear war takes place, he's the one who has the authority. But, you know, there is a whole chain of command for everything. So, similarly, anywhere, it is like the higher you are, if you are a major member in a, in the government, it's not that you will be carrying out the lowest task. So there are at least various people who will do your bidding. So because you are so far away, so you may say something, but somebody else does the dirty work. Just like when we are eating, if somebody is eating non-veg, then he is eating meat on his table. So you may blame the poor waiter. But the waiter is only bringing that. But then somebody is cooking it, somebody has cut the animal, somebody has killed the animal. There is a whole chain. So the waiter may say that I am only just, you know, I am not harming anyone, I am just doing my duty. You know, that doesn't work, because ignorance is not any excuse. A human being cannot be excused because of ignorance. And Srila Prabhupada gives his example of the communists, you know, the atheists who would not like to let God be in the center. And in Russia, when there was a lot of exploitation of people, people were very poor, at that time they would go, the communists would go outside the church, and then they would proclaim loudly that when the people are going in the church, he's saying, okay, you want to go and pray in the church, you go and ask your Lord, can he give bread? So after the church service is over, when the people would come out of the church, and then these communists would be waiting there and saying, so did you ask your Lord, where is the bread? So they said, no, there's no bread. And they were being exploited anyway. So then they would immediately bring the various trucks of bread and then give them, see, we are giving you bread. So who's better? We are better or your so-called God? And many ignorant people thinking that, who were actually being exploited by the leadership at that time, would turn to them. So, if we are wanting to be exploited and fooled, we will be exploited and fooled. But if we really want to achieve something higher and actually take the pains to go through that austerity, we will find that. There was a very famous man in Europe who, he was so much anti-God that he was going from city to city, and he was a showman, he was a great dramatizer. So he would go and talk, and he would gather a lot of people, go to the town hall, and then say that, I challenge God. God, if you are there, he would make it a personal dialogue between him and God. He says, God, are you there? If you are listening to me, then strike me dead now. And then they would wait for a few minutes, and then a lot of people would gather because of this drama. You know how everyone loves to see, you know, something happens. Everyone has enough time for that. So, you know, somebody just touches someone on the road, people will walk from that 25 meters away or so, they will suddenly leave everything and come because they think there's a potential of a fight going on. So, here, you know, everybody gathered, hundreds, sometimes thousands of people would be gathering, and then they would wait. And then you would wait for 5 minutes and then say, see, there's no God. I'm telling him and he's not able to strike me dead. But, and Maharaj was giving this lecture, he said, but where is this man now? He was struck dead. But Krishna strikes him dead when he wants to strike him dead, not when this guy wanted Krishna to strike him dead. So eventually, anyway, he was struck dead. But the timing is left to Krishna. So, but people at that time would, you know, if they have no knowledge, then they would feel that, well, you know what he's saying? Yeah, I mean, if there is God, and people say that he... So if you have been given faulty information about who God is, and as if he's just like your order supplier, you ask and he delivers. He's not your butler around the corner. You know, he will do it at his time. And he's doing everything out of his own innate kindness. Maharaj, Radhanath Maharaj, in his when he came to India in 1970, he relates this story that among the first instances of his entry into India, when he came to Delhi, and he was in that mood of extreme... he was having a strong desire for God consciousness. That's why he came here, and we know the story of how he took all the troubles. And then he immediately, within the first few days in Delhi, he just came across a big puja that was going on. And So he was very impressed when he saw that all the pujaris were instructing all the people. The people were all with praying with very fervently, with eyes closed, tears rolling down their cheeks. And pujari was indicating, you know, offering coconuts, offering this, offering that, garlands, so many things. So he was watching fervently, and he was really thinking that this is such so much piety, so much of great. He felt that he's getting purified just watching it. You know, Maharaj was feeling that. And this went on, and then when it got over, then he went up to the main performer, who was the main participant. And he asked him, you know, what are the purpose? He said, well, you know, we're just starting a new factory, so we were going through this. So actually, millions of people who do not acknowledge the presence of God. But there are, most people would probably say, yes, there is some God, but then they would just have an external kind of superficial, I wouldn't even say superficial, it is just a lip service. Prabhupada would use the word lip service, that they would speak but not act on it. So they would carry on exactly like a gross materialist, but they would just pay lip service to it, and maybe they'll carry some insignia, some cross or some, you know, tulsi, malavot, something, just to show that they have a contact, but it doesn't make any difference. And then there are some who actually do believe, and then they would pray, they would also maybe alter their lifestyle and go to the temple and all that, but then they would be doing it for material gains. So this is that category where, and we see lots of it, we all perhaps have participated in it. When Diwali comes, all these big puja, Lakshmi pujas, and all these, in Gujarat TV, and the Chopra pujan, so all the big Chopras come in the front, and everybody wears those old caps which they don't wear, you know, for many decades, but on that day, suddenly, you know, you present yourself as very spiritual. Everybody comes around, and even the foreigners who are working in your company, they will also come, you know, because they all want, everyone has the same goal, that look, if we can please Lakshmiji, then we may get something. So there are many activities where we are doing something which is actually having material gain. So ultimately, the discrimination that we seek is for the highest understanding, and we are very weak in that. We are very, very weak. We cannot, even if we mentally understand it, we would have great difficulty in following it. But that is where we need the help, and we get the help of association and of a pure-minded, pure devotees, advanced devotees, serious devotees, and through that we get the incentive to follow a certain lifestyle, to chant the holy names, to read, to understand philosophically, and then move to stabilize it in our life. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that from the highest planet to the lowest, all places of misery. That if you want to escape this birth and death, come to my abode. But then that is, with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's form actually gave us the highest understanding that even this, wanting to break the cycle of birth and death, is inconsequential for the most advanced devotees. The real desire is just to serve and be happy, just seeing others happy in serving the Lord. And then whatever the Lord wants will happen. But even otherwise, trying to break the cycle of birth and death, even expecting liberation, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that even millions of people who may show some kind of religiosity, even from that, there are very, very, very few who will actually want to have liberation. So even if we consider liberation, which is not the highest goal, but even that is very few people will be pursuing that. What to speak of pursuing the highest of the high, which is really that we find the greatest pleasure in just serving the Lord and His devotees for all time to come. In this context, there is a kind of a dialogue between Maya and her demons, which I would like to read out. Perhaps you may think that this is not reality. I mean, I have not seen, because I didn't participate in this conference between Maya and her and the lieutenants. But you can imagine that it is quite a likely scenario where with the purpose may be achieved. So there was a worldwide conference of all the lieutenants of Maya that was called by Maya Devi, and she said in her opening remarks that we are not able to keep people from going to pray. We may not even be able to keep them from reading the holy books and knowing the truth. We may not be able to keep them from forming an intimate relationship with their God. And see, if once they have a connection with God, then our power over them is broken. So let them go to their prayers, let them have their various dinners, but let us steal their time so that they don't have time to develop a relationship with God. So then the lieutenants were asking then all the assistants, what do we do? So she said that, see, I will tell you what you should do. You distract them from gaining hold of their God and maintaining that vital connection throughout their day. So how should we do that? So keep them busy in the non-essentials of life and invent innumerable schemes to occupy their minds. You tempt them to spend and borrow and borrow and borrow. You persuade the wives to go to work for long hours and the husbands to work 6-7 days a week, 10-12 hours a day, so that they can afford their empty lifestyles. Keep them from spending time with their children. And as their families fragment, soon their homes will offer no escape from the pressures of work. Overstimulate their minds so that they cannot hear that still small voice, the voice of the conscience. You entice them to play the radio or cassette player whenever they drive. Keep the TV, VCR, CDs and their PCs going constantly in their home. And see to it that every store and restaurant in the world plays non-God music constantly. This will jam their minds and break their union with God. Fill the tables with magazines and newspapers. Pound their minds with the news 24 hours a day. Invade their driving moments with billboards and hoardings. You flood their mailboxes with junk mail, mail order catalogs, sweepstakes, every kind of newsletter and promotional offering from free products, services and false hopes. Keep skinny, beautiful models on the magazines and TVs so that the husbands believe that outward beauty is more important. That will fragment their families quickly. Give them distractions so that they don't teach their children the real meaning of life. Even in their recreation, let them be excessive so that they return from their recreation exhausted. Keep them too busy to go out in nature and reflect on God's creation. Send them to amusement parks, sporting events, plays, concerts, movies instead. Keep them busy, busy, busy. And when they, now this is very important, and when they meet for spiritual fellowship, make sure that you involve them in gossip and small talk so that they leave with troubled consciences. You crowd their lives with so many good causes that they have no time to seek power from God. Soon they'll be working on their own strength, sacrificing their health and family for the good of the cause. There are many good causes. It will work. So the assistants naturally went to work. So here the question asked is that do we think that that Maya has been successful? We have to be the judge. I think the answer is very clear that she has been largely successful to the extent that we allow her to be successful. If we want to fight back, even though the odds are impossible, it's very difficult, but when we seek the right guru, right association, right movement, and if we are fortunate to have, without even endeavoring too much, we actually get that opportunity, it is one of the rarest or the rare, the greatest gift that we can receive. And just a little bit on Srila Prabhupada's life, I mean, we may say that we have all, since we are all part of ISKCON, part of Vaishnav philosophy, and we don't know how we came here, but we say, now how do we please him? Well, by following his authority, by listening to his instructions. And we were reading the other day in a small group, which I had heard in a lecture, that it's very nicely put, that actually if we continue to serve Srila Prabhupada, if you do authorized service, not concoct any service, that means there are various ways. Prabhupada gets pleased, then he is blessed. So many, whether they're doing book distribution, whether they're doing preaching, they're doing deity worship, they're cleaning the floor, they're even cooperating between husband and wife. So many things he would constantly, you know, he would always be blessing and giving his, you know, happiness, expressing his happiness so much. So he was very, very encouraging. So we know how that he gets pleased. But so if we were to do any of those authorized services regularly, then the vital link between Prabhupada and whoever is doing the various services, whether it is preaching or washing pots, is preserved as much as in 2010 as it was when Prabhupada was physically present. This is the fundamental thing which will drive us and continue, and we will feel the presence because we know that he will be pleased. And how do we know? Because devotees are pleased. Devotees around us are pleased. Bhagavatam says that these services are very satisfying. Yayatma suprasidati. Very satisfying to the soul. That is also a proof. We also know that Prabhupada himself has said that do all these services. So we get the confirmation that Prabhupada is happy doing this. We get happy doing that. And in that we know that that vital link is preserved between us and our Guru and with Srila Prabhupada eternally, not even if he is not present. And we see that that in his absence, in the absence of 33 years physically, the Vaishnava movement is spreading like wildfire in spite of a much more difficult environment. And it's a matter of for us to whether we participate in it or whether we want to be away from it. We may be actually attending lectures, we may be coming to the temple, and we may be actually, then still we need to question that are we actually really internally putting Krishna and Guru in the center of our lives, or they fit a certain pattern of our life where we do recognize. Because now when we're talking of us means the, those who come to temples regularly, for us perhaps talk of atheism and all that is not relevant. Materialism, yes, very much so, because we are all very concerned about material prosperity, so we need to question that. But what is of greater relevance to us is to really, the subtle dangers that we need to ask ourselves is, even if we come here, we hear the lectures, are we still putting Guru and Krishna in the center of our lives? And what does that mean? That there is steadiness of service, devotional service, day in and day out, year in and year out. You know, month and years goes on, and we this becomes, there is no diversion from that path. Whatever comes in front of us, there may be occasions of services may change, environment may change, our internal situations may change, and we get distractions, we get good news, bad news, or some health problems in the family, whatever, the situations keep changing. Through that, are we still keeping that steady? Or are we finding pleasure in coming to the temple, especially when we have some difficulty at home, we come to the Lord and we see the beautiful forms, we feel happy. But we put a distance and say, thus far and no further. This is a question that we all need to ask. Otherwise, you know, Shukracharya's example to us means that That sense of discrimination of whether we really genuinely believe in what we are hearing, that life is temporary and we need to surrender everything to the Lord, whether it is actually happening in our life or not. And one last point on the aspect of charity which has been mentioned here. Prabhupada mentions in the purport that Rupa Goswami has given, this is for all Vaishnava followers to follow, that he has given a very simple formula which he himself implemented, and that would be an ideal goal for everyone. Perhaps we may not be able to follow it now, perhaps we may be able to not be able to follow completely, but he has put the gold standard, and this is what we ideally need to achieve. There are devotees who are actually following it even now, which is a great inspiration. But and the standard he has said is that Krishna really becomes a, it's a 50-50 partnership. Overall, Krishna is 50% for Krishna, 50% for preaching or to devotees and helping others. 25% for Krishna directly, 25% for preaching other things, another 25% for emergencies and 25% for family. So, of course, situations are different. One has to look into that, but we must aspire to see how we can contribute. And this is we're talking of monetary terms, but we know that the greatest charity, the greatest welfare is when we have examples of those who are in the renounced order, who are giving their whole life completely, that consciousness, their body, mind and soul. So this is of course the highest and the most most inspirational, and that is why Grihasthas are strongly requested in our Shastras to follow to take inspiration from the renounced order, to take the association for those who are genuinely following that. But within the Grihastha or married life, we should, because of the temptations to keep on having, you know, savings and think of this, think of that. So we need to balance. And if we are in some confusion, we can always take advice. And there are many who are, some who are dedicating their life only to help others in this, because they have done it very well in their life, managed it very nicely, and then they're trying to help others. But that initiative can only come from us. Nobody can force it, because this is a private matter, and that is also the greatness of our gurus and our advanced devotees, that they never interfere in our private lives, which is amazing. So much, see, this is again a paradox, but this is actually what brings the inspiration, that and that where that voluntary part comes, that ISKCON and Vaishnava philosophy, as Prabhupada has taught us, he actually, it's quite in that sense aggressive to bring Krishna consciousness to our doorstep, and to keep on pounding, you know, our brainwashed mind to seek the reality, you know, presenting it in so many ways, the preaching. It doesn't let us live. It's not that you just put donation and go. It actually keeps on giving us the opportunity to question what we are doing, and in a very nice way, through prasad, through preaching, through friendship, coming to a home sometimes. But at the same time, you know, it brings everything, presents everything. But then finally, to take that step, whether we want to really accept it and what we do in our lives, it never questions. It doesn't, if we ask it, otherwise, the Guru, Prabhupada, I mean, he would never, you know, say, okay, you do this or you do that. So that's where the voluntary nature is. And if we misuse that, then it would be greatly unfortunate, because we've come so close by being given this on a platter and then not taking the last step of molding our life according to how it is to be utilized. So it is not to be a discouraging statement. Actually, it is the fact that we are here, and the fact that we got the opportunities is beyond our calculation, the encouragement of that we can get, the greatest blessing. But now we should look further, not look back and say, okay, we are very fortunate. We are fortunate, but what do we do about it? And that's this example, that how Bali Maharaj could use his very finely thought, this intelligence, fine intelligence, to discriminate where he should follow and where he should not follow, and where he directly surrendered to the Lord. And he is the best example for us all time for Atma Nivedan, the ninth devotional service. But as far as we are concerned, we can learn from this, that we come closer and closer and evaluate our lives accordingly. So we'll end here, and if there are any questions before we close, any comments? Yeah. Anand Vrindavan Prabhu will ask the question and probably answer it himself. Incidentally, Anand Vrindavan Prabhu, many devotees know that, you know, he also helps a lot of devotees in very practical advice on how they can plan their lives. And many devotees have benefited from him. So those who are not aware, you should actually go to him, because he's in fact arranged his life in such a way that he spends his time only doing this, free of cost, just helping others in giving the technical understanding as well as the spiritual understanding. Maybe till that time you can ask the question and I can repeat the question on the mic.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, talking about the charity, so I always, from last about 2-3 years, I'm having this doubt and I was not able to get a proper satisfactory reply. So being you being in the corporate world, you can clarify this doubt of mine. It is extremely difficult, even if you are a devotee, to follow the principle which Prabhupada said in a household life, to give 50% in donation and 50% keeping ourselves. Even if we are a very sincere, committed devotee, so-called, still to come to that level is extremely difficult. After seeing that, when we see in the corporate world, the biggest, the richest person in the world, like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, who were the richest person in the world, and when they prepared their will, they made it very clear, it was not 50%, more than 50% they gave in charity. When they gave more than 50% in charity and they were the richest person. In fact, when they prepared the will, this is what I read it, is that they had kept very least money for their family members and maximum money they spent it for charity purpose. Of course, their charity was completely different than what we are doing it. But if we could have think it over, that if you would have preached them, they might have even converted to our level also. So having that standard, and they might have not earned in a proper, being a richest person doesn't mean that they might have done everything very systematically and very truthful in a very moral way. Then how is it so that when they can reach to that level and still maintain such a wonderful consciousness, whereas we devotees might have not even able to earn that level, yet we are not able to have that consciousness. So can you just give us a clarity, because you being in the corporate world, that what is the thing by which they came to that consciousness, and what is the pitfall into that, which we have to learn from it and maintain our Krishna consciousness smoothly?
We have to really trust the Shastras and the pure devotees who give the purports and explain to us. That is the only thing we can really trust. Everything else we have to take with a healthy dose of distrust, what we hear and what we see. Because today in... And this is a fact. This is not simply out of criticizing someone. It is a fact. I mean, there is people who, in their private moments, they will also fully agree. And I know it. I know how it works. The richer you are, the more powerful you are. You have full armies of people who completely, it's a public relations army. You have, so what you read, what you see, and what you are made to present are... from the really powerful or the real rich people is what you are made to feel. The photo opportunities that come, because there's a nexus between the ultimately the business, the newspapers are also businessmen. They're also the highest. So what you read is what you are meant to read. What you are seeing and what you are seeing is what you are meant to see. So you see people in coming to Africa and giving 1 million computers here or doing something. It is all. The way you, the whole a cult is or a an image is being cultivated, and it's a cultivation which we are talking of people with tremendous intelligence and experience in this, an army, not is just not one. So it is, it's how you cultivate people, how you present it, how you bring about it. So that is one thing. The same Bill Gates, he was here just last week, and he had full page interview, and what is he proponing? Saying overpopulation is the problem, and therefore you have to go for genetically modified food. So it may be very casually made statements, or actually very sympathetically put. That so the impression is that they're doing a lot of charity to eradicate poverty, and to eradicate malaria, to eradicate this, to do that. But if you are indulging in what is against tampering with nature, if you are indulging in against Krishna consciousness, if you do not accept the principle of Krishna being in the center, everything else is completely useless. It's completely useless. Not only useless, it is dangerous. This is really the way that the most, and that these are the most dangerous people. Not so much the man on the street or someone who, you know, comes and opposes. Because when the people with the greatest amount of power can use it to propagate, and it's done in such a subtle way, it's not something which is very, very crudely done. It's very subtly done. So, giving a nice impression, one day, you know, showing a photo of, you know, how they're right among all the small underprivileged children, and then next day show, you know, among the in African some village. Everything is arranged, and most of these poorer countries, and India is not excluded from that, though we are not in the level of the African countries, where just yesterday we were talking to one a devotee who happens to be blessed with you know, incredible power, who's actually right up there with the richest, and is probably not far off from where Bill Gates is. And he was saying that as a matter of fact, because he owns many mines in Africa. So we were asking him that he said very clearly, he's thinking when his own company is contributing 30-40% of the GNP of the country, the president will do everything to receive you and do what you want. Now, these things don't come out because they have to protect it. But then you can see how, if you have favors to ask, if you want to, whatever you want to do. So when Mr. Bill Gates or Mr. Warren Buffett or someone comes and, you know, the power they carry is perhaps even more than the president of their country. Because they can influence and they can do to many other countries. So ultimately money is the main power. So even the charity that is presented, it's something which they know what is it that attracts the common man to say that, oh, they are for the poor, their heart beats for the poor, they're doing it for the poor. But their understanding of charity is very different. It is charity means they will be putting, yes, they will not, they ultimately if you have 40, 50 billion, you know, even if you have many mansions, okay, how much do you need for yourself? Not giving to family or giving small thing is one thing. But that use of it, if it is not used for Krishna conscious purposes, God conscious purposes, and in a manner where we try to convert people's hearts and people's minds in such a way that they actually can get out of the real misery of absence of Krishna consciousness. Our philosophy teaches us to know that the real poverty is of the spirit. That whether is the rich are perhaps even more affected by it. So this poverty actually increases because it is like it's a business. You know, in whatever you do, if like genetically modified foods means not only it is corrupting the practices and cultures of and going against the nature, but corrupting the practices of people who simple people who have been eating you know the simple food for centuries. But also is giving a business proposition to a whole new industry. And one statement, one... So where is that money going? That we need to examine. You may put in a trust and that trust... If you build a $500 million research center for trying to eradicate health diseases, it's a very noble thing. But who's benefiting? Somebody's benefiting. It is not... there is a health industry which is the most powerful lobby in the world. Why is it that medicines are about 15 times costlier in the Western countries than in India? And India also, their prices are high, but 15 times. Why is it that margins are 70-80% profit? So, you know, the things are so subtle. So it may be difficult for us to see, but ultimately we know if action speaks louder than words. If Warren Buffett is a confirmed atheist, then all other things that he may say and do, he may project a very simple, still stays in a three-bedroom house, still drives his own pickup truck. What is the value of that? When he is so envious of the Lord that he has no room to that, the power that he has, if he was to even in a subtle way say that he is on the side of God, let's say even if he is not following it, even that doesn't come through. So we have to be alert to the dangers of such people who actually, and that gives a very strong statement. People feel even greatly relieved that, well, he's not following and he doesn't believe and he's such a simple man, he doesn't seem to do any harm. But do we know every 24 hours, every moment in his life? No. We don't have that. We keep hearing on the internet and seeing that what we are meant to know, nice stories that come. And believe me, this is a fact. This is the way, you know, the way the you can you it is manipulated and done. Even simple people, I mean, I know how it works, but we do it in a very, very limited way. We know how, so we can just extrapolate and actually, and we hear people, they say that. And sometimes you can see it, sometimes, most times you don't see it, it's so subtle. But the fact remains that everything is manipulated to even the image you create, you know, where you are seen, what you are doing, people talking about you, all that is cultivated. So this is how an image building is something which if we are not indulgent, we have no idea how it is done. You get comments from others who naturally benefit from associating with you, and they will say something, and they have certain right in their own way, in their own country. Then you find someone else speaking about him, someone is saying, so you keep reading and say, oh, and then slowly, slowly an image is built. So that is of no value. Now coming to our own difficulties, yes, living by these principles is difficult. But being honest and transparent and simple as much as we can and accepting that this is the goal is of a much higher level than to, you know, be a phony by being a, you know, pretender like, you know, who may give an impression of something but the reality is different. That is the most dangerous because you're actually misleading. Why Prabhupada was so much anti-Mayavadi, I mean, I used to wonder in the initial, years that, I mean, why so much? You know, you could straight away talk about communists and this and that because these people are openly saying. But he used to, we know how often he used to say that and with strong words because it gives a semblance of religiosity, right? It gives some idea, okay, that okay, at least they are not, I used to think that, well, you know, they still wear saffron or they are, many of them don't eat meat or at least they talk about God or temple. That sort of thing. So you get some, but that is the more dangerous. But then you get trapped into it, and then when you get believe, and then you look, and you find that there is no room for God and surrender. But if we are God, and by that time, you know, you are completely brainwashed and you believe us. So Prabhupada saw the danger, and he came down so heavily. So the subtle things are the most dangerous, not the gross things. So actually. Without going into, I mean, we would never know details of who does what. But finally, the test is the real simplicity would be to say that who's in charge. Give the credit. Have you ever heard anyone say that I'm so blessed by the Lord that He's given me the intelligence? Or He's, no. If somebody has made his wealth, how has it happened? He got some idea sometime. Let's say he had an invention or he created something, you know, whether it was a software system or whatever, a computer chip or something. Then we hear stories of this. Some of them went to a garage and did this and started a company and it was only $1,000 worth and it became $10 billion in 15 years. But see the circumstances. Who put it together? Is it everything accidental that those people happened to come together, that they were studying in Stanford or Harvard and that they... somebody got the idea. Where did the idea come from? And Krishna directly says, from me comes knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. Now either you believe it or you don't believe in it. So if he says it very clearly, and if you don't acknowledge it, then what does it mean? Not even acknowledging it, not once in your whole lifetime. It obviously means that that is action speaking louder than words. In a whole lifetime, in no time then if we were to mention once, or even act on it. So it is very clear that there is no room for that. They do not believe it. So then you are misleading people to believe that it is in your minds. You are the brilliant person. And therefore you are taken up to certain levels saying that you... But actually it is... Yes, you have the intelligence someone has given you. You have a set of circumstances which have favorably worked to you. Everything has happened. Does it mean that others have not worked hard? Does it mean that others are not intelligent? There are so many brilliant people who become total flops, so-called flops in business or money. Brilliant, absolutely. They have to go through their karma. They have whatever these people have, the karmas that they have benefited. But the way they have led their lives, now we shudder to think what the future could be. So actually the way we were to look at, when we see, therefore the guideline is that if they really at least acknowledge and live by certain basic principles, rather than being envious. So even in the matters of charity, charity is something which it's pleasing to the heart when we see others, and therefore it could also be misused into giving an impression of how it is done. Any other questions? Yeah, there's a mic.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Prabhuji. That was a very lucid presentation. In such a short time, you covered such a wide range of topics. Many of these issues have been agitating my mind also for quite a while. But I never had the kind of clarity that you brought to all the subjects. If I vent all the feelings that I have, I think it might embarrass you too much. So I won't open my heart completely. But I have one request here. And I am sure all the Vaishnavas are also with me in this. I would like you to write a book. It could be just an anthology of your thoughts on various topics. Say, secularism, or all the topics that you covered, self-respect and materialism, a wide range of topics that you covered today. Each of them, whatever you said, is worth writing it in gold.
You're forcing me to reveal a secret. It's actually not a secret, actually. But everything that I spoke is already covered. It may not be in one book, it may be in somebody's lecture. I might embarrass Vraj Vihari Prabhu because I borrow heavily from his lecture, from Radhanand Maharaj. So I can put it together and give you, but that is, I'll have to say who said what. And finally you find everybody, because everything, this secularism, self-respect, I mean, we, these are all from, you know, lectures which have been spoken. It's just that put together. So anyway, thank you, because that is encouraging.
Thank you very much, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
So, the book has already been written, it's just that it is in many books. So, we'll stop here, it's a little late. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.